Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. This is your host, Paul Weber. This being the time of year that we generally celebrate St. Patrick's Day on the 17th of March, I figured it would be fitting if we spent this week talking about the man himself and the history surrounding him, and maybe a little bit of Ireland as well. In the program, or in the studio today, we have a guest, Mario Sarek. Mario has studied on this subject a fair bit and spent some time living in Ireland as well. So welcome to the program, Mario.
Thank you, Paul. It's you know, it's an interesting topic. I had a chance to live for a year and a half in Ireland and be able to visit some of these places that we're going to be talking about today. So it's kind of like taking a walk in history back few thousand year, 1,500 years, and look at some of these places and see what historical significance they have.
Yeah, okay, fantastic. So we'll hear from you today regarding that, and next week in the program we'll share some, you know, documentary information on St. Patrick himself. But I have a simple question to start with. Why is the 17th of March? What's the significance of the 17th of March?
Well, you know, if you look at the time span, we're looking at St. Patrick. He lived around, we don't know much about, we know a little bit about his early years, and definitely we know quite a bit about the time where he was a missionary in Britain and in Ireland. Obviously, that's where he started his mission. But we know that from some of the legends, so to speak, or that's where the March 17 was the day I died, 461.
Okay, so it's an anniversary of his death, basically.
Anniversary of his death, yes.
Okay. So, St. Patrick, he was a missionary. When did he arrive in Ireland? What were the circumstances of him being in Ireland? You know, what do we know historically about that?
Well, we have to remember at this time, we're looking around, you know, just before 400 AD, that how the you know, how, what was the historical, political situation at this time? We know that the Roman Empire, who was the largest Roman, you know, the power that was holding Europe and much of the world at that time, had been started being a decline, had crumbled. And in its place, it has basically become where the church has stepped in. The Pope of Rome was more in control. And together with some of the kings in Europe, he was able to dictate the life of the Europeans, so to speak, in what to believe and so on. And but it was interesting, when you go to some remote areas of Europe, and particularly when you go to the British Isles, you'll find certain lifestyles. So people who call themselves Christians, who seem to have lived a very humble way, and a way that seemed to be more what you read in the New Testament of the of early apostles, the way the ones that would walk with Jesus, and the beliefs and the custom that they held. And so when we look at through history, we find that, you know, who were these early Christian missionaries, or who are the early Christians in Ireland, for instance, even before Patrick came? And we find out they actually had come from the Palestine area, all the way up due to these trade routes, because you remember Roman called, you know, we talk about Roman roads, all the roads lead to Rome.
Oh, yeah.
But they were magnificent. You can actually, under Roman rule, a man could travel from Berwick to Babylon without crossing a single international frontier. That's amazing.
You know, it's a large area.
It's a large area, and there was, you know, infrastructure of road. that would have been useful to traders as they were for soldiers as well. We always think, oh, that was for the soldiers. And also it was a very fairly, you know, safe way to travel, because these were always, you know, soldiers who were used as well as traders. So these are actually merchants and traders and ordinary people who actually heard the purity of the gospel, the simplicity of the gospel that were preached, you know, by the disciples.
So these were the conditions that existed when Patrick was alive. He had you could travel in large areas, and under this jurisdiction, he traveled to Ireland. Is that correct?
Exactly, you know, but what's interesting that before Patrick comes on the scene around 431, and we won't go into much about his early life, because in our next episode we'll look through this documentary a little bit more about who Patrick was, his life, where he came from. But I thought it was interesting that the bishop, you know, of Rome actually sent a few delegates to deal with these so-called heretic Christians in these isles, because, you see, they had full allegiance to Christ. And they will base everything on his word. And so here there was a little bit of a friction, mm-hmm. because the Pope in Rome was asking for allegiance only to him. Mm-hmm. You know, the tradition was above the scripture in one way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they send a particular person was called Palladius to go there and trying to deal with these. You know, at this time, it wasn't very well organized, the Christianity in Ireland or in the British Isles. There were just pockets of people who were sharing these things that, you know, to some of these people, they were classified as heretics.
So what was it that Patrick would have taught that would have infuriated the establishment, you know, would have upset the Roman Church? What was he teaching?
Well, you know, Patrick was very... at this point where he actually did some studying and so on, and you'll find that he basically propagated the simplest gospel message, you know, the simplicity of sharing who Christ was. And one of his things that when he came to Ireland was to look at the hedonism that was there. We have to remember that when he arrived at 432, and basically his mission was from AD 432 to about 460, so it spends quite a bit of time. It's interesting, Paul, that you know how old Patrick was when he was actually going on his first mission trip?
No idea.
He was over 40 years old. So we'll find out that the early Celtic church, the ones that actually went out and became very influenced in these areas, we talked about the reformers, but really these were the early reformers that stood up for the truth in the Word of God. Mm-hmm. They were all in their 40s. Mm-hmm. You know, late 30s, 40s, not very young. They started very young, but it took some time before they actually felt they were able to go out and preach.
Mm-hmm. So if church leaders of the day were against him or infuriated with him, he must have been teaching something different than what the establishment taught or what they believed. What put him in contrast with the leaders of the day? Like what sort of teachings did he hold that would contradict perhaps what they were teaching then?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that they called him and his follower was to call him that they were heretics or heresy, you know.
And which actually means what? What is a heresy?
Well, it's interesting. I looked it up. You know, I always think, we always think of heresy, someone who speaks against specific church dogmas or doctrines. Mm-hmm. But really, when you look up the word heresy, heresis from Greek, it means action of taking or choice, making a choice. So, you know, this is a very interesting way that the church called those people heretics. In fact, really, they were making a choice. And this is what the Bible teaches. God gives us this choice that we can make for him or against him. And he gives us up. But here the church is very, using the same word in a wrong sentence, really. It does not give them, you know, the choice that people can make. And the choice that we all have to make is, are we for or against Christ? And this is what the early church was very, where this anger came out, is because they based it all on Christ and his word.
So really, we're not under the dictates of another person or another body. Yeah.
That was another thing that was very common, was that the church, you know, during these dark ages, taught that you had to do certain things or, you know, if you were not part of the church, you had no eternal life. And so this is something else that sets it aside, because you yourself, as individual, has a direct connection to direct communion to God, really, to Christ. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is what church said, no, you have to go through the church in mm-hmm. order to commune or, you know, to be, as the Pope is the one who is representing Christ on earth. So we see several things. It's not just one or two things, but these are the prominent things that sets mm-hmm. them aside because mm-hmm. who is the head of you? You know, who is the one that's the one that dictates your conscience? And that's one of the things. Another thing that you'll find out also that they were what they considered them as being separate. They didn't want to be inclusive in this, you know, in the Roman Catholic Church at the time, which was very prominent. And so they only had one and only one allegiance, that was to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what really separates them.
Yeah, okay. So was there any other teachings that they held at the time or anything, a doctrine that they held that would have been different that was widely taught that day in those days? Or?
Well, you'll find out that besides from what I just mentioned, these things that, you know, it's interesting too, who were they influenced when you think of, where did they find out these biblical truth? Because remember, the Bible was not available to the masses, to the people. There were a few selective things that the Bibles were actually chained to some of these monasteries and so on. But we'll find out actually when you look at some of the history that, they were influenced by the Coptic Christians from the Palestine area, from Egypt, and you know, directly from Jerusalem and not from Rome. So their beliefs and practices were distinctly dissimilar for those of Constantine Church. This time was the Constantine that we're looking at 360 AD, who of course had this epiphany and converted to Christianity, but mm-hmm. still held a lot of the pagan traditions and so on, and just basically incorporated into church. And that tradition had, you know, been propagated through. But one of the things that stands out, and I think we'll see a little bit more of that, is, and you can read in the history even later on in 1000 AD, is that the early Celtic Church, both St. Patrick and Columba and Aidan and all these early, followers after Patrick, really Patrick was the one who led the movement, they all kept the 7-day Sabbath, the mm-hmm. Saturday. And you can find in many writings, where especially with Queen Elizabeth, who was when she was, you know, being Queen of Scotland, that she was very upset with this. You know, these people were actually working on Sunday, mm-hmm. and here they were keeping Saturday, the biblical Sabbath, as a day of rest. Mm-hmm. And you know, she writes several places to her cousins back in England how these people were strange.
Interesting. Mm. That seems to be an issue that has cropped up through the ages and continues to crop up now.
Yes.
What about Druidism? Did that exist in Ireland? Or did that tie into the time period that St. Patrick was preaching as a missionary? how does that, you know, did that play into his missionary work at all or not?
You mean
the Druids?
Oh, the Druids, sorry, yes. Well, indeed, very much. When we look at Druids, and, you know, I had a friend, actually, who was, he found it fascinating, the Druids, and all the, you know, all the pagan things that they were involved in. And really, when you look at it, Druids were very much based on, you know, pantheism, humanism, man becoming, being God, really, and have his own destiny. And, you know, this is what
sounds very new age.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, it's so much for being new.
Yeah.
You know, but
there's no new things under the sun. Yeah.
No, that's true indeed. Mm. And you know, this is what Patrick had to contend with, because they were very influential. Actually, there was at their height that Patrick was sent to the island to preach the Christ-centered message from the Bible. And it's interesting, there was a natural clash here, because anything that the Druids were teaching were really 180 degrees of what Christ was teaching. You know, mm-hmm. you can take everything of their belief, you'll find it goes right against what God's words teaches. It's amazing. And, how Patrick was able to, you know, being faithful to God and God able to sustain him. And little by little, the light was being shone in this part of the world that had been under darkness too.
So he must have sensed a great degree of resistance then in what he was preaching, because what the Druids were teaching must have been quite entrenched among the people.
Well, yes, indeed. I know, and it wasn't just the religion was a separate facet of everyday life. It was you know, part of that. Today we might say, well, we keep church and state separate or whatever, mm-hmm. or, you know, my religion is in my belief and you keep yours. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was a very strange. And we have to remember also, this time of the time, people were not very knowledgeable. You know, mm-hmm. the many suspicious and fables were circulating, and you know, a lot of these fables that people made up and had no bearing or whether it was true or not. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, lack of knowledge was also a problem, mm-hmm. because of these things. You know, people weren't educated or they weren't really well versed of what was truth.
Yeah. So, who were the followers of Patrick or the Celtic Church in that day? He must have had some followers, through that time period. Do we know of any, or do you have any information on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Patrick, and later on we see Columba, set up several centers in Ireland. There are several mentioned. Glendale is one. I was very close there. It's just south of Dublin, in County Wicklow. And there are other places dispersed in Ireland where they set up missionary centers. This is another thing that distinguished them from the Roman Church, is they were very mission-oriented. And what I mean by that is, you know, we always think that Patrick took the message from Ireland to the rest of British Isles, especially Wales and Scotland. But it didn't stop there, actually. They took it mm-hmm. to the rest of Europe. And I think that was partly, too, why Rome felt a little bit, you know, angry. Because here they were actually sharing the truth, which they had hidden for so many years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't accessible to the people. And mm-hmm. here, you know, Patrick and his follower are actually sharing these things.
Mm-hmm. So did he have any significant followers in that day, or was it, you know, Patrick himself that was propagating these truths, you know, throughout Europe? Or who are some of the followers that he might have had that might have been prominent?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, God takes a single person like Patrick, and, you know, it's interesting when you read about his life that, you know, he started preaching Christ to the Irish first. And then later on, as this was embraced, this message, and you know, we have to realize that God is able to do some mighty with one individual here. mm-hmm. You know, God seemed to always take in the least, the ones that don't seem to be, you know, well eloquent in speech or high position, but take them and be able to do mighty things through them. Mm-hmm. And we see that in life of Patrick. He had several followers. He started a missionary. He started these, how should I say, training school, if you want to call them, where people were trained, to take the mission, take the message out to the other outposts, especially on the islands and other parts where it was remote from, you know, the other kings. It's interesting what I found with Patrick. Do you know who he first approached? We know he preached to the people, but really when he approached first, when he came to Ireland, he was actually preaching to the kings. I thought that was fascinating. Mm. Yeah, one of the first few people who were baptized was actually two daughters of one of the kings in Ireland. They had several kings for different regions. And he actually went to the kings and he preached the plan of salvation to them and was able to influence quite a few of them and their household. Also, Paul, I was thinking interesting that, you know, Patrick died, as we said, 461. At that time, but his message didn't die with him. You know, sometimes we have that. You have a leader and then the message dies, and that's probably what the Roman Church was hoping this will happen, you know, and the leader die and so on. But we see that even 100 years later, actually, if I take you to 521, that's when Columba was born, and he was in Donegal. But it's interesting with Columba is that he actually went to preach to Scotland later on. He was a little bit different than Patrick in the sense that he received a very high scholar. You know, he had a good education. He came from wealthy parents. And interesting, again, at 24, he completed his studies. And then, you know, at 40, with 12 friends, he set out to evangelize basically Scotland. And, you know, he was a very prominent leader in the Celtic Church, Columba, and also Aidan, as we know, but it's interesting that towards his end, he lived to be at the age of 76, and Columba died 9th June 597. I'm just putting these years so you can have our listeners can have an idea how far we've gone now from, you know, 460 to 597, and it's interesting. There's been a lot of recordings about what Columba stood for and what he preached, And one of the things that he that was written about him is that, interesting, I thought, noted that his death took place on a Saturday, and that his final words to his servants were this, and this is what he wrote: "This day is called in the sacred book Sabbath, which is interpreted rest. And truly this day is for me a Sabbath, because it is my last day of this present laborious life. In it, after my toilsome labors, I keep Sabbath." Columba had always venerated the divine commandments and did so even with his final words. So, you know, it's interesting, but Columba done is by raising the profile of the Celtic Church, Columba had directly challenged the authority of Rome. In the very year of Columba's death, and this is very interesting, is that Pope Gregory sends a man that we're going to talk a little bit about to counteract the mission or the work that's been done by Columba.
Quite interesting.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a verse, actually, in the Bible in Revelation 12:17. It says, "And the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ." Mm. We see throughout the centuries how, you know, those who do keep the commandments will suffer under the wrath of the enemy. And it's true today. It'll be true in the future. It was true back then. So it's interesting, the teachings of St. Patrick and Columba, which followed him, how they agreed with each other, but yet the persecution that they suffered.
Yes, and then the person that they sent, actually, the Gregory, Pope Gregory sent, to trying to subdue the Celtic independence and also to convert the heathen Saxons. Well, Saxons was called, his name was Augustine. Maybe you're all familiar with Saint Augustine. Mm-hmm. But here he was sent, you know, to actually counteract this mission that was going around particularly in the British Isles. And so, you know, we see from there on that his influence did have an impact. A lot of the places in the British Isle gave up and accepted the papal decrees, but it was still held very strongly in part of Scotland and Wales particularly. And they held all strongly to the belief, you know, that St. Patrick's and Columba and Aidan and other had also, you know, shared the truth that we find in the gospel.
Interesting. I find it interesting too when you read St. Patrick's breastplate. Mm. You know, it's quite simple and profound. It says, "Christ be with me, Christ within me, Christ behind me, Christ before me, Christ beside me, Christ to win me, Christ to comfort and restore me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ in quiet, Christ in danger, Christ in hearts of all that love me, Christ in mouth of friend and stranger."
Yeah. And then I thought, I don't know if you had anything else to add. I thought it was basically what his breastplate is a summon and is the way he lived. You know, it wasn't just a teaching, but he lived out the teaching. And there had been a lot of research done on some of the other things that the Celtic Church kept. And a prominent professor here, Leslie Harding, had done some amazing, you know, discoveries. And I just want to share the last minute here some of the other things that the Celtic Church kept that was biblical. It was interesting, you know. It says there that, you know, he found there was a deep love and veneration of the Scriptures. They lived the Word, you know. It wasn't just that they had some sort of doctrinal thing, but they actually kept it. He found ringing passage in the writings of Patrick of Columba in which they envisioned the literal second advent of Jesus. They didn't believe, you know, some sort of phase or whatever. It's a literal coming, second coming. And with that, they believed in the day of judgment. You know, they were living in the day of judgment. He discovered that the Celtic attitude was such that all life was governed by the Ten Commandments, not just the fourth that we've been alluding to, the Sabbath, mm-hmm. the seven-day Sabbath, but also the whole Ten Commandments that they held dearly. Not just to be, you know, thinking that this had a merit, that you'd be saved, these Ten Commandments, just the fact that they understood that one was not saved by the merits of his deeds, but by God and his grace. Salvation was by grace through faith in the merits of Christ of Calvary. Law-keeping was a fruit, not the root, of salvation to the Celtic Christian. In effect, not a cause of salvation. The cause of salvation was Christ alone. Another Celtic distinct is stressed by modern authorities and derived originally from Linnaeus was baptism by immersion. You know, this was very strange because the church believed in an infant baptism. Here they believed in a, you know, an adult baptism where you make a commitment to follow Christ. So we can see this, already an early Reformation that was already starting coming to Europe, a light mm-hmm. that was going to be, you know, lighting up the whole Europe eventually through the other reformers that we are so well know about.
Now, our time is running short.
Yes.
But I know that you've spent some time living, working in Ireland. Just on a personal note, quickly, can you tell us, you know, what the influence of St. Patrick is now in Ireland? Is there still an ongoing, a legacy with him? You know, to what degree is it part of their history now?
I think it's a sad one way, really, if I would say that. Is I was excited when I came over because I read a little bit about St. Patrick. But a lot of people who are there don't know really their own history. You know, they don't understand what they stood for. Especially now, because St. Patrick's become like a canonized, you know, saint yeah. of the Roman Catholic Church, which was not initially when we see that. And I think also, you know, his life was a very pure life, a noble life. Today, St. Patrick's always associated with drinking and so on. He was never drank, actually. You know, he lived a pure life. He lived a life dedicate his life to Christ and allowing Christ to live in his life, to be an example to those around us. And so I think, you know, I think there's a hidden gem in the British Isles, especially in Ireland, and where I believe that, you know, if people truly knew who this Patrick was and the life they lived, they will fully appreciate the gospel message that he preached.
So now, with all the information that you've shared with us today, is there a booklet perhaps available that we could make available to the listening audience? You know, that,
well, yes, I brought a few things over actually a few years ago, but I still have a few copies. And you know, if someone wants to write into us, they can order the booklet's called The Celtic Connection, written by David Marshall, Dr. David Marshall. And you know, maybe you can give him the email that they can contact us, and they can be able to request a free copy for themselves.
All right, so anybody that's looking for a copy of that booklet called The Celtic Connection, you can write us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.